Ms. Ainsworth.
Good morning, sir. Good morning, panel. I represent Airborne Beepers and Video, Inc., and may it please the court, we have a very simple issue, and we're really just trying to get past the complaint stage. The issue on appeal was whether the court abused its discretion in not allowing Airborne leave to file its first amended complaint.
First amended complaint. Well, but Airborne has been in this case with a co-plaintiff, certainly, but has been in this case from the beginning.
Well, Airborne certainly was listed as a plaintiff. Initially, Calderon proceeded with several complaints. Those complaints had, among other things, a Section 1981 and 1982 claim. He had some state court claims. He started out with about 10 or more claims, but the Section 1981 claim applies only to Airborne.
But my point is, from the time of the first complaint filed here, Airborne was involved. You know, theories have evolved, different kinds of things have been drafted, but this isn't Airborne's first shot at an amended complaint. This is well down the road from there, depending how you count, you know, fourth or fifth.
Well, I think that until the Ninth Circuit came out with the ThinkJet opinion, that there was a great deal of uncertainty about whether Airborne had standing as a corporate body to assert a discrimination claim.
Just a theory. I mean, my concern is that Airborne has been here, if you will, for a long time.
Well, according
to... Go back to Judge Brady's order of October 8, 2003.
Okay.
And Airborne is there. It says DBA Airborne Beepers and Video, Inc., which might be a slightly awkward way of putting it, but they're certainly there. And then things evolve in the next case, and when you get to the order of December 13, 2004, it's Gustavo R. Calderon individually and Airborne Beepers and Video, Inc., an Illinois corporation, and on through. So certainly by December 13, 2004, Airborne is listed as an individual plaintiff.
Well, until the that second amended complaint, in Judge Grady's opinion, I think it was the June 23rd, 2005 opinion, it was at that point that the judge stated that it was Airborne that had the federal claim.
Well, but
and prior to that...
I'm only taking issue with your characterization of this appeal as something representing Airborne's first opportunity to file an amended complaint, because Airborne has been a party for a long time in this litigation, and whether legal theories were going to succeed, whether it's a federal theory or a state theory, is all well and good, but it doesn't mean Airborne hasn't been in the case, and it doesn't mean Airborne hasn't had a chance to file amended complaints.
Okay. Well, I think that with respect to the Section 1981 claim, which is the subject matter of this appeal, Airborne filed a complaint. It was styled as a third amended complaint. It was at that juncture, pursuant to the court's order of June 23, 2005, that Airborne was first named as the complainant in the Section 1981 claim. I was not the attorney when that was filed. All of the complaints that I've looked at have been forensic for me. I mean, I got in this case in December of 2005, and at that point I requested leave to file an amended complaint for Airborne. Prior to that, there was a complaint filed. It was styled as a third amended complaint. It was filed pro se. Well, it was Gustavo Calderon, who was the co-plaintiff, filed the complaint on behalf of Airborne. The defendants objected, stating that Airborne's a corporation, they need to have counsel. That was in August of 2005. That complaint was stricken, and a little bit more than a month later, the same identical complaint was filed. It was also styled third amended complaint, and it was identical in every respect to the previous filing. The difference being that the certificate, the signature page, had a cross out, and Michael Vitale, who's an attorney in practicing here in Illinois, had signed it, and it was dated differently. Basically what we're asking for is an opportunity to pursue our Section 1981 claim. We believe that, pursuant to ThinkJet, that Airborne has a palpable claim. We do believe that that area of law is evolving. Certainly there's nothing in the Seventh Circuit that could give us guidance on Section 1981 claim for corporate, at least not as of the time I filed this brief. I didn't see anything in the Seventh Circuit. I think that in the interest of justice, under Rule 15A, that we should be given leave. And that's what we're requesting. It's very simple.
All right. Do you want to save the rest of your time for rebuttal?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Ainsworth.
Thank you,
Ms.
sir.
Ms. Gomez.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
I guess I'll start with the topic on which the lion's share of discussion has taken place so far. After the ThinkJet decision and Judge Grady's dismissal of the second amended complaint, the plaintiff, Airborne, was given, depending how you count it, at least two opportunities to plead after the second amended complaint was dismissed. So in Judge Grady's order dismissing the second amended complaint, which is where he identified the ThinkJet decision and stated that it was his belief that the proper party plaintiff in the Section 1981 claim would be the corporation, in that order, he goes through, as he did in all of his previous orders and in his subsequent orders, an exhaustive, instructive analysis of what would be required to cure the prior pleading deficiencies, including identifying for the plaintiff who would be the proper plaintiff in that claim and what the controlling authority was in his view on that topic. After that, a third amended complaint was drafted. We don't know whether it was drafted with assistance of counsel or not. It was filed unsigned by an attorney, by Mr. Calderon, on behalf of the corporation, which of course was impermissible. That complaint was stricken. And at the hearing in which that complaint was stricken, then an attorney was permitted to come into the case. Mr. Vitale, the new attorney, was instructed by Judge Grady specifically, take a look at the complaint. We've had a lot of problems with these pleadings. We've been through a lot of iterations. The court has expended an inordinate amount of time on this. And if you think there's something else that should be changed, now is the time to do it. So I will strike this third amended complaint, but I will grant you leave to file a new third amended complaint, which essentially gave an opportunity to amend again. And we called both complaints this third amended complaint because one was stricken, but indeed there was another opportunity at that point to amend and to address whatever deficiencies should have been corrected.
Ms. Gomez, did anybody ever complain that Judge Grady was requiring too much factual detail and deviating from the notice pleading standard of Rule 8?
Not that I am aware of, Your Honor. I handled the matter throughout below. From the very first complaint, our position had been that the complaint failed under Rule 8, in addition to having made arguments pursuant to Rule 12.
And you had a Rule 9
I believe
issue
we did early on, Your Honor.
Yes,
and I can't remember which of the five complaints it was, but in an earlier complaint, we had made a Rule 9 argument. And as you say, over the course of the litigation, several counts were winnowed down and the complexion of the complaint changed somewhat the factual allegations, and there were many, and they were overlapping and, in our view, confusing, didn't really, in essence, change.
And so you never moved for a more definite statement or anything like that?
We did not, Your Honor. We did not. There were a lot of detailed allegations, but there were not. There was no concise statement. There was no sort of coherent, consistent laying out of each of the legal claims that was being asserted in each count. And, in fact, throughout, a major part of the confusion and the, you know, a significant defect in the pleadings related to the fact that there had always been two plaintiffs. And in the first complaint, it was listed, as you identified, as Mr. Calderon, DBA, a corporation, which didn't really make sense. But throughout that pleading, notwithstanding that there was only, in some ways of counting, one plaintiff listed, the pleading referred repeatedly to plaintiffs and identified the relationship between the two, Mr. Calderon and the corporation. So there is no question in this record that the corporation has been party to this action, involved in this action throughout. There is no question in this record that at the time the motion for leave to amend was denied, that the plaintiff, the appellant here, the corporation, was represented by counsel. There is no question that after Judge Grady ruled in dismissing the second amended complaint that the proper plaintiff in a Section 1981 claim would be the corporation, that after that, the corporation did have an opportunity to replead, and in our view, in fact, had two opportunities to replead. So that is the primary argument that has been advanced by the appellant for reversal of the Rule 15 denial. We submit, Your Honor, that Judge Grady was well within his discretion in denying the plaintiff appellant here a sixth opportunity to plead, and that indeed we submitted to Judge Grady that it would have, we thought it might have been an abuse of discretion for him to permit it, in fact. So as we set forth in our briefs, and I will try to just summarize here, the only thing at issue here is denial of leave to amend pursuant to Rule 15. There is no question with respect to the merits of the dismissals at issue. There is no question that it's an abuse of discretion standard of the Rule 15 denial. And indeed, if we were going to look at the substance of the dismissal of the last complaint, which we're not here to do, that also would be an abuse of discretion standard. And so under any way of looking at this, the only question is whether there was an obligation by Judge Grady to permit a sixth attempt, or if you like, a fifth attempt, to plead these claims by Calderon and Airborne Beeper. And we submit that he was well within his discretion in not having permitted that, that the dismissal was proper, that the denial of leave to amend was proper, and that that decision should be affirmed here.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez. Ms. Ainsworth?
It was clear from Judge Grady's opinion on June 23, 2005, that he was able to discern a Section 1981 claim. In fact, he stated in his opinion what paragraphs apply. It was a voluminous complaint, no doubt. It probably took some time for him to discern exactly what conduct constituted the Section 1981 claim. But he did state what particular conduct would apply. It's true, as the defendant points out, Judge Grady doesn't have an obligation. We know that Judge Grady doesn't have an obligation to give us an opportunity to replead. We do, however, feel that he abused his discretion. He did not cite any discernible standard in his opinion. For example, undue delay, prejudice, those things were not mentioned in his opinion as reasons for his denial of a leave to amend. Basically, what happened was the Airborne had an attorney, and that attorney didn't do anything. He failed to amend the pleading in any regard except to add his name. I think that perhaps Mr. Vitale found himself with an insurmountable problem. First of all, there was no discernible guidance in the Seventh Circuit with the with respect to a Section 1981 claim in a corporation, for those reasons, he may have been hesitant to replead what had already been pled. Perhaps he felt overly cautious for that reason, and did not wish to plead further. But I believe that, in effect, what happened was Airborne was not effectively given an opportunity to fully expound the Section 1981 claim, and we're requesting that they be given that opportunity.
Right. Ms. Ainsworth, your time has expired. I'll have to ask you to make a concluding remark if you wish.
That's all I have, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Ainsworth. Thanks, Ms. Gomez. The case is taken under advisement.